And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes, in for another week. How are you all keeping? How was your weekend? I hope it was very nice for you. If you were working, I hope it went smoothly. If you were off, I hope you had a great time. But we're back. It's Monday morning, 4 minutes past nine, Monday the 3rd of November. And we've a busy show lined up for you as always. We mentioned last week quite casually on the programme that, you know, there's a lot of questions out there about LPT evaluations, re-evaluations, all that kind of stuff. We have a Q&A on the local property tax. So if you have any questions in relation to it, please give us a call or a text right now and we'll get answers for you. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or call us on 07491 25000. So if you have any questions, uncertainty or clarification needed on the local property tax, listen, it's an expert in local property tax, not how it's spent. So in terms of where the money goes, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to drill down into that for you. But suffice to say, hopefully, if you have any questions, any uncertainties, we'll be able to get some clarification for you. So text and WhatsApp on that. But anything at all, by the way, because we love your comments here on the show. And those numbers apply, 086 60 25000 for your WhatsApp and text for general queries. Or call us on 07491 25000. Maybe there's something you think we should be talking about after the weekend. Maybe there's some good news that you want to pass on and share with people. We're more than happy to cover all things. And emails are always there for you, of course. Comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. So that means you can watch us on your mobile devices, but also your smart TV and your Fire Stick. We're across Facebook and on the X platform as well. The Donegal News reports light at the end of the tunnel. A major road infrastructure project in... It's not a tunnel that's needed, it's a blooming bridge. But anyway, a major road infrastructure project in Donegal, the biggest to date, is expected to be submitted for planning approval in January next year. Donegal County Council, in attendance at Friday's special plenary council meeting, were given a detailed update on the progress of the long-awaited transport... the Trans-European Transport Network, that's the 10T project. They were told by council officials that the major road infrastructure project is expected to be submitted for planning approval in January 2026, which would also include the formal notification of compulsory purchase orders to close to 500 property owners. The Donegal 10T project proposes targeted improvements on three sections of the national road network. Councillors also heard that the estimated 5 years of works could start in 2028 with a completion date of 2032. Okay, yeah, so obviously for it to be under 5 years, it'd have to be at the start of 1 year and at the end of the other. In the presentation, the council officials detailed how the project would be realised, which included detailed maps of the upgraded road networks. This includes the proposed bridge across the River Swilly, which is a major part of the project. I'll be honest with you, that's a bridge I never thought I'd see to go to construction. I'd be delighted if that began in 2028. So hopefully we're going to get a version of that briefing for you on this programme in the next, if it's not today, in the next couple of days or so, just so you know precisely, directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak, progress in that regard. The Derry news this morning. Derry City and Strabane District councillors have unanimously agreed to write to Stormont Education Minister Paul Gavin, Giffen, regarding the dilapidation of a school building in the city. Raising the issue at Wednesday's full council meeting, Councillor Aisling Hutton of Sinn Féin highlighted the ongoing situation at St Eugene's Primary School near the city centre. Councillor Hutton said it was not the first time the infrastructure of schools in the city and district had been the topic of conversation at the council. On to the Nationals now and the Irish Independent. And there is a sense that the government, and we talked about this on Friday, that the government is maybe changing its policy or its language in terms in relation to asylum seekers. A lot of people, you will hear stories of not happy that so much money is given to people in accommodation, etc. So that might be about to change. Asylum seekers who are working in Ireland will have to pay between 15 and £238 a week for their accommodation in the IPASS centres under plans to be discussed by the government today. The Cabinet Subcommittee on Immigration will meet to discuss a range of measures as the coalition hardens its stance on the issue. New figures show 5,000 people are living in IPASS centres despite being granted a legal right to remain in Ireland. So effectively they are legal citizens but still benefiting from the refugee accommodation. Well, not legal citizens, but they have certain rights that legal citizens have. And therefore, they're no longer considered an international protection applicant. The Cabinet Subcommittee will discuss a new charging model for those in IPASS centres who are working. It's to contribute to the services they received. Under the plans, which have been worked on by Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan and Minister of State for Migration Colm Brophy, there'll be a range of weekly payments depending on earnings. This is not considered a cost-saving measure, rather one to ensure fairness across the system and to ensure more people move out of state accommodation. Non-payment would be pursued through debt collection and enforcement proceedings in the courts when a debt has been accrued. So you will hear stories of people who are living in IPASS centres. I've had stories related to me that, you know, they might be going in and collecting large sums of money for post offices, for an example, and people are aggrieved by that, but they also might be working as well too. So in terms of fairness, I think this would be a good move, to be honest with you, because there is a sense of unfairness out there at the moment. But under the rules to be discussed by ministers, any applicant who refuses to pay would be denied citizenship while any arrears may remain outstanding. Meanwhile, the Labour Party has strongly criticised proposals to cut the time Ukrainian refugees can remain in state accommodation from 90 to 30 days. That's another proposal as the government hardens its angles, its tones in this area. Talking about the TEN-T and other projects, other major projects, just an interesting story in the Irish Times that aren't necessarily relevant to it, but it's a big project and this is about big projects. The grounds for taking court challenges to decisions on big infrastructure projects would be narrowed to those directly affected by a proposed scheme under plans to be considered by senior ministers today. If you, when I was working full-time in the newsroom, I went through an awful lot of planning applications because it was a source of news, right? So you'd go through the weekly lists and see anything that was perhaps newsworthy. And the one thing I did notice, and this wasn't just with major infrastructural developments, but across the board, was that a lot of the objections might be coming from down the country. So you'd see objections from Leitrim, Galway, wherever. And maybe it was a proxy, you know, maybe there was someone local objecting, but they didn't want their name necessarily on the objection, so they got a friend down the country to object on their behalf. I was never really fully comfortable with that. I'm not really sure, unless you're directly affected, you should be really have a say in it, but I'm open to correction in relation to that, and I'm open to argument in relation to that. But anyway, certainly if you're not affected by a major infrastructural project, should you be able to object? Well, going forward, maybe you won't be able to. The Cabinet Committee on Infrastructure is to discuss proposals from a task force established by Minister for Public Expenditure Jack Chambers. With the coalition under significant pressure to tackle infrastructure backlogs, it will examine a range of measures aimed at introducing a higher threshold for pursuing judicial review cases. This is a category of legal action that challenges administrative decisions, such as planning permissions and other, often results in long delays for infrastructure projects, which in and of itself can be the goal of sort of judicial reviews. It emerged that Ivan Yates may have been giving some advice to Fianna Fáil's presidential election candidate, his brief stint at it. He might have been giving advice. This is Ivan Yates. Not fantastic, I would say, but anyway. Reading in the Irish Daily Mail, a war of words has broken out between Fine Gael and its coalition partner Fianna Fáil as the fallout from the presidential election continues. Tensions have increased after it emerged that former Agriculture Minister and one-time Fine Gael TD for Wexford, Ivan Yates, mentored Fianna Fáil's Áras candidate Jim Gavin, but kept his role secret during the campaign. Matters came to a head at the weekend when it was revealed that Today FM broadcaster Matt Cooper had parted ways with podcast partner Mr. Yates following a newspaper report stating that the former minister was aligned with and paid by the Fianna Fáil camp for the services. Now, fair play to Matt Cooper taking a stand in relation to that. I've not listened to that podcast, but I do know it's actually really quite popular. So it's a big move. The two presented a political podcast titled Path to Power that was produced by celebrity agent Noel Kelly. Former Justice Minister and ex-Fine Gael TD Alan Shatter stepped into the controversy over the weekend, accusing Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin of concealing Mr. Yates' role from the public. So it's a bit murky. And, you know, maybe if people don't have an issue with it, it's just the fact that why keep it a secret, I suppose. It's all going to come out in the wash. But I'm not sure Ivan Yates will be getting any consultation gigs soon, if that's the best he could muster with Jim Gavin. But anyway, DJ Kerry's going to know his fate today. He's likely to end up in prison. This is in The Sun this morning. Shamed hurling legend DJ Kerry faces jail today over defrauding friends and fans over... out of nearly €400,000 by pretending to have cancer. The former Kilkenny star, 54, is set to appear at the Criminal Court of Justice in Dublin for a sentencing hearing this afternoon. His initial hearing last Wednesday was adjourned after the court heard that he was attending Portnoy University Hospital in Ballinasloe, Galway. Disgraced Kerry finally made it to court on Friday, where Judge Martin Nolan said a custodial sentence for Kerry was inevitable. I don't know how much I can say about this. There's no excuse for what DJ Kerry did, but he would argue maybe there is excuses because of other things that were going on in his life. And obviously defrauding family and friends, there's an awful lot of, you know, it's not a good thing to do. It's a bad thing to do, of course. And, you know, maybe he does deserve going to prison. I don't know. Because this is sort of like a financial situation. But I'll be honest with you, and this sounds really obvious and potentially populist, and I'm not intending it to be that case, but I'm just speaking honestly. Day after day after day, I see court cases of people who are guilty of abuse, that have child abuse images. Those images are on their computer because children were actually abused. It's not a victimless crime. And they know that. They know what they're doing. And they get suspended sentence for having 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 views. And the amount of damage to children that would have had to have happened for those images to be produced. And then for these perverts then to get some sort of a gratification from that. And then to walk out of the court with a suspended sentence. And then you see a case whereby this is a financial situation. I'm not saying there aren't victims, but this is going to be a custodial sentence situation. And I know the law is complex, and I know judges have to sort of operate with between the guidelines and precedents and all that kind of stuff. But I do find it a little bit uncomfortable that we see people every day walking free, guilty of what I think is one of the most heinous crimes there is. And then you have someone involved in a financial fraud with potentially mitigating circumstances like addictions or what have you, and they're locked up. I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, one's wrong, one's right. I just, it just, there's just something seems a little bit off there for me. I don't know what you think, 086 60 25,000. I'm not trying to say DJ Kerry shouldn't be punished for what he did. It's just the law sometimes can seem a little bit skewed in different directions. The Mirror now. A woman whose terrified kids were caught up in the Halloween arson attack on an asylum seeker centre said they were lucky to survive it. The mum said the children could have died as Gardaí continued a major probe into the arson attack on the property in the centre of Drogheda, County Louth on Friday night. The woman, who's from Ghana, told RTE News she was outside the building waiting for her children aged 8 and 12 to be rescued. She asked, "How can somebody be so mean?" The woman and her family are now in temporary accommodation. The attack has left 28 people homeless. A security review of all IPAS centres will take place speedily, the Minister of State for Justice, Home Affairs and Migration has said. Now, this was inevitable, and another one is inevitable. I find it remarkable that we're only reviewing security now. There was a lot of buts going on with that story, though. You know, that action or that type of activity is terrible, but... that's what I heard an awful lot of over the weekend talking to people. And lastly, in the Irish Daily Star, the taxpayer, which is you, of course, has been left to foot the bill for more than €15 million worth of incorrect welfare payments over the past 2 years. A total of €7.97 million in benefits were written off last year, up more than €300,000 on the equivalent figure of €7.64 million from 23. The Department of Social Protection said overpayments of welfare were written off partially or in full when there was no prospect of future recovery of the cash. They said 75% of these payments related to people who were deceased, while other overpayments of less than €100 were considered uneconomical to pursue. Right, that was a run through some of the stories on the front of and inside the papers today. We make our own headlines, of course, every day on this show, and that will continue after we take this break. A leading Irish fish processing company has been found not guilty by the direction of a trial judge of ensuring the accuracy of equipment used to weigh fish at their Killybegs premises. Sean Ward Fish Exports Limited appeared at Letterkenny Circuit Court, where it faced two separate fishery charges after a three-day trial. Judge John Aylmer directed a jury to find the accused company not guilty because of a lack of evidence against them. Brendan Byrne is CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association. Good morning, Brendan. Thanks for your time this morning.
Good morning, Greg.
This has been hanging over this company for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yes, this relates to a 10-year saga in which the state has pursued Sean Ward over this case. And as you correctly stated, it was before the judge in Letterkenny Court last week. And thankfully, justice in Ireland is fair and balanced, and the case was thrown out for lack of evidence. But I think it speaks wider to a state harassment of industry by the competent authorities, and perhaps even the state. And the consequences of this case and other more recent cases where they were also thrown out by the trial judge for lack of evidence, that we need to look in depthly at what exactly is going on within the fishing sector.
What is the motivation for these cases? That's a question I think would be worthwhile. And also, what is the responsibility for the lack of competence in terms of pursuing it, wasting everybody's time, causing distress with no outcome? I mean, surely pursuing this for 10 years and to be chucked out through a lack of evidence, A, you know, is there someone going to be held accountable for that? And also, as I said at the beginning, the B question is, you know, what's the motivation in all of this to begin with?
Well, I think we need a national debate on fishing. Because in my assessment is that we have agencies that are supposedly there to support the fishing sector, and they're quintessentially anti-fishing industry. And this spells to that, as far as I can see. But we need to acknowledge the court reporters that have done an excellent job in putting this out into the public domain, because
for sure,
even that would have been gotten away with only for the likes of Donegal Daily and Donegal Democrat. But what we have here is a company that has worked very hard and provide 90 jobs in Killybegs, have worked from the bottom up and are in very difficult times, as is everyone in the fishing sector. But and the state response was, we'll drag you through the courts for a 10-year period. And when it goes to trial, there isn't a scintilla of evidence against them. If that isn't state harassment, I don't know what is. And it's not an isolated case. And meanwhile, the government of the day are standing idly by. This is happening in plain sight of everyone. There is harassment of the fishing industry on a daily basis. And it is a sector of the economy that I should be here today talking about a growth strategy, but it's not. Foreign landings are down. The amount of Irish quota landed into the country is less and less, because we have destroyed the reputation of our fishing industry because of what we've seen in this court and previous courts over the last number of years. This has to stop. This is state harassment. When you pursue a company unrelenting, year after year for 10 years, bring them to court and your case is thrown out by the trial judge because you've no evidence, that is harassment.
Also, too, is it the case, and to make sure we're talking in the same space as we have previously, this is a decision as to how we apply European laws, i.e., they're applied in different countries very differently. Maybe the powers that be actually work with the industry in relation to this. You know, this is our choice. This, for all we talk about in terms of, you know, quotas and Europe and what have you, this is a homemade problem.
It is completely domestic problem. It is a complete problem of our own doing. And I have spoken to this numerous times. We are over-regulating. We are strangling. On occasions, we are coercing industry to fill in declarations and returns in terms of sampling. That's not accurate. What is happening in the fishing industry for the last number of years is nothing short of a national scandal. Thankfully, we have an Oireachtas committee that has a big body of work to do, including examining this and other similar cases. But what has been allowed to happen in the fishing industry for the last 20 years is a national scandal. We are destroying the industry. We are strangling the industry. We are losing jobs and revenue hand over fist, year in and year out. And it has to stop, because the coastal and maritime and peripheral areas have no alternative employment. We should be proud of our maritime history rather than hammering the living daylights out of it with over-regulation and harassment.
But why is it happening? But why is it happening? What's the motivation? Like, if you look at some of the excellent court reporting that you referenced there, some of the site visits there, it was pernickety. It was almost, it reads like, you know, something was going to be found one way or t'other.
Well, I read the court report and I came to the same conclusion, that they were hell-bent on prosecuting this company, which is Sean Ward Fish. They were just motivated to prosecute this company and harass them. Is but that isolated to them? No, it's not.
Yeah, but just to give the listeners some idea, right? So we were talking about how catch is accounted, and we can talk a little bit about that. But in one visit, they thought the CCTV cameras were a bit dirty. This is that we're overseeing the weighing of catches, right? So this is a work environment. The cameras appeared a bit dirty. So they went back and the cameras were cleaned. And then they said they thought they spotted something that shouldn't be there. It was as if, right, well, with the cameras, damn it, you've cleaned the cameras. Now, I'm not trying to libel any individuals, don't get me wrong. I don't know the individuals involved. That's not my motivation here. But it was like, right, well, blooming hell, the cameras have been cleaned. But what's that there? That shouldn't be part of the apparatus. And it seemed to be a trend, a continuation of this type of activity.
Absolutely. Well, it is a work environment, and to process fish, you use typically anything up to 5,000 litres of water. So there's going to be a lot of splash and that. So it's quite obvious that cameras will get dirty on occasion. But I think what you're speaking to is the kernel of the problem, that they were just hell-bent on making an example of this company. They do it with other companies. And law has not been applied equally or fairly, nor has it been applied on a level playing field basis across Europe. And that is what we have. We have an overzealous enforcement regime in Ireland that is destroying the fishing sector, destroying it, costing jobs, costing revenue to the economy. That is what's wrong. And that has almost been a state policy for the last 20 years. And that narrative has to be reset quickly, because as we've seen on the 30th of September, the amount of cutbacks in quota because of overfishing of other countries such as Norway and Iceland is going to decimate the coastal and maritime regions of Ireland. But we have to get real here in Ireland. And I think earlier this morning, I read a piece in the Irish Examiner where finally Ireland is waking up to that we're gold-plating everything that comes from Europe. We're over-applying everything that comes from Europe. We're strangling our own economy. The sad reality is we have strangled fishing and fish processing to annihilation, because this has been going on in our sector for the last 10 to 15 years.
Does this, and maybe you said this a little earlier on, and this is part of a process, though, there needs to be oversight of actually what has been going on, okay? So if all of this was triggered by, you know, one or two cases of overfishing or whatever it might be in the past, like, this type of scrutiny of processors in and of itself needs some sort of an overview as to what was going on. People brought, I don't know if it's before a committee, even a public Oireachtas committee, or if it be some other space or what have you, but this is embarrassing, right? So this needs its own scrutiny. People need to be brought in, right, and explain precisely what was going on, what was the motivation, what was the interpretation, and how did we find ourselves in this position? Because you could argue this is equally as embarrassing as perhaps if we were seen as to be lackadaisical in terms of, the application of rules.
Look, I need to be very clear. We welcome oversight and we welcome rules and procedures that protect the stocks. We are the most compliant member state in all of Europe in terms of fishing and fish weighing and accuracy weighing. We are the gold standard. That's not what's at debate here. What's at debate here is you have an agency of state harassing industry. You have an agency of state intimidating the industry.
Yes, but do you see my point to bring that agency of state into an Oireachtas committee or wherever that space may be, invite people like yourself and TDs and scrutinise it? That's the oversight. Let's understand exactly what was going on and what the motivation is.
I think the consequences of this case and other recent cases which failed to meet a minimum evidence threshold and were directed to be dismissed by the judge, effectively the cases collapsed. This is not an isolated incident, but I think there's going to be far-reaching consequences of what happened last week in the Letterkenny courthouse. There has to be. We are dealing with state harassment. It has been going on. I know it. The people I represented, they are subject to it. So there has to be far-reaching consequences of what has happened in this case and other cases. And that will go to the very heart of government in the next short period. And I believe there has to be a full investigation into the functioning of the SFPA over the last 10 years.
Is any other area of industry or any other sectors subjected to this level of scrutiny?
No, not at all. I think if the most successful sector of the Irish economy was subject to this degree of harassment and coercion, you would destroy it. And we have the richest fishing grounds around this island, and our industry is dying on its feet, has been for the last 10 to 15 years. That is because we're not functioning like an industry in Denmark or in the Netherlands or France. We are being strangled by regulation. We are being harassed by competent authorities. This whole narrative has to be reset, and that can only be done by a deep delve and an investigation into what the hell was allowed to happen in this country for the last 10 to 15 years.
But also, obviously, this is all exacerbated by what effectively is the Wild West off our coast. And because of technology, you can sit and watch the factories do whatever the hell they like, some in the EU, some outside the EU. And then, internally, you've got this level of scrutiny, which perhaps wouldn't even register as 0.00000 anything of all we're talking about here. We're arguing about a minuscule amount of the stock, and yet you look out from Killybegs, not necessarily literally, and it is a free-for-all. And then you have to pick up the pieces of people saying to you, well, there's not enough fishy to fish anymore. And whatever fish you catch, it's crazy what's going on. It's almost unbelievable.
Those countries and member states that catch between 85 and 90% of the fish around Ireland are not regulated at all. In Ireland at present, we're lucky if we get 12 to 14% of the fish that's caught around this country. And that is subject to the amount of scrutiny and harassment. We are pro-scrutiny, but scrutiny and harassment are two different things here. Scrutiny and coercion are two different things here. And that is what we have seen, and that is what has decimated this sector. Our reputation's in tatters because no foreign vessel will come into this country, or very few will, because of the degree of intimidation and hassle they get in Irish ports. Unless, of course, you're a Belgian or a French beamer and you can go and put your produce into the back of a lorry without any scrutiny or oversight. That's what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And that is what has the likes of me and other spokesmen on programmes such as yours said our industry is dying on its feet because of the nonsense that has been permitted for the last 10 to 15 years, and it has to stop.
And just by the by of that 12 or 14%, is it still a case that some of that fish, some of the stocks that we were very generously given by Europe, because of the level of scrutiny, ends up as meal rather than food because of the sort of onerous application of these regulations. Surely that's not still the case of that tiny little fraction of fish we get.
And I had a discussion with the SFPA as late as last week. As I speak to you today, we cannot weigh blue whiting without damaging the quality of them, which means it can't go into human consumption. That is a national issue that can be sorted here in Ireland. Europe are not coercing us into that, but we're over-interpreting rules and regulations to a point of strangulation. And that is not an isolated incident. There's incident after incident, and that is why we are here talking about 17,000 jobs that are on the line because we are putting them out of existence through harassment.
But I get a sense that they said, what next, right? You said working on something. What is it?
What we need to do is, and thankfully we have a dedicated minister, we have oversight in the Parliament through an Oireachtas committee. All this is to be aired out. I think today what you and I are doing is the start of a long national debate that will get to an end point. And the end point is the harassment of the industry stops. The coercion of the industry where they're forced to do things that are impossible to do stops. And that is going to be a long, hard saga and debate. But it has to be done. The pain has to stop. And the fairness has to return.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association. It's an issue affecting a lot of people in this region. There's just no doubt about that. And well worth the conversation. A caller says this is state-sponsored punishment, beating on a sector. Another, the state spends more money mismanaging the fishing industry than the industry generates. The SFPA and state use the courts as their customer care department. Someone needs to be held accountable. Another, speaking about state agencies working against fishermen, DAFM and BIM are refusing to let the mussel fishermen go to fish. The entire bottom-grown mussel industry is facing bankruptcy because of red tape. It seems like they're clearing the seas to make way for offshore wind farms. I don't know. We'll see. I can see where that might come from, especially when some organisations representing the industry have some skin in that game as well. Right, we'll be back with more after the break. We received email from the Religious Sisters of Charity, which reads, "We're deeply saddened to announce the passing of Sister Stanislaus Kennedy, known to many as Sister Stan. Sister Stan died this morning after a short time at the St. Francis Hospice in Blanchardstown. Sister Stan was a powerful voice for compassion, equality and systemic change throughout her life. She'll be greatly missed by her family, friends, co-workers and the congregation. While there's a deep sadness, we're confident that their legacy of a life dedicated to the service of others in need will continue to inspire us and generations of activists and social innovators in Ireland." Those were words from Sister Patricia Lenehan, Superior General. And Sister Stan would have been a regular on Highland Radio as well over the years. May she rest in peace. We might return to that in more detail down the line. Now, Independent Councillor Michael McBride has asked members of the Letterkenny Milford Municipal Area to support his call to have a review of the current fees for call-outs of emergency services to road traffic collisions. Councillor McBride, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so what's the situation, Michael, as it stands?
Well, I suppose, Greg, it's just I know a lady who was involved in a single car accident. There were very minimal damage done to the car, no headlights broken or anything, but the airbags went off. And when the lady eventually got out of the car to survey the damage, then the emergency services arrived. And so obviously somebody who arrived at the scene of the accident called the emergency services. And then following the accident, the woman, she received a bill for €1,580 and subsequently contacted her insurance company, who asked if she called, made the emergency call herself. She told them that she didn't. So they told her that because she didn't call them herself, she wasn't covered. And then they also told her, you know, that in the event if she had to be cut out of a car or anybody else, that they would only be covered up to a ceiling of €1,000. So I put this motion forward to our next municipal meeting and would like the Special Policy Committee of Donegal County Council to review the policy. I think it's going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of people in the future, you know, because most people don't realise that they wouldn't have cover. Mm. And in fairness, if you were in a car, you wouldn't be able to make the call yourself. So a lot of people won't qualify. And it's a huge bill for to get For people, you know, that are probably, a lot of people are still on, you know, still, you know, on the breadline. And, you know, it's a huge bill for to get for them. So I think we need to review the whole thing. And I think it'll take up a lot of time of council staff to administer it. I can see a lot of court cases to try and collect money. And I think, you know, it's not a reasonable amount of money for to pay for, you know, a call out. A lot of people feel that these emergency services should already be covered through the income tax and the taxation that they pay. So that's the reason I'm bringing it in there, Greg.
So who has to be called out for you to be billed 1580? Is it a set fee? Is it a standing fee? Or is it the fire service, the ambulance, Gardaí, one of all, or one of each, or one of all? Or what is the rules as they stand?
Well, it appears at the moment that when an emergency call is made, that both the ambulance service and the fire service would attend. And it's the fire service that have issued the bill, you know, on behalf of Donegal County Council to the client.
Mm. And has this been in place for a while? Do we know? I'd be very interested, and maybe it will come out in the wash if you don't have the information already. You know, how many times are these bills sent out per annum in this county, if you know what I mean?
Greg, at this point in time, I don't have that information. It's the first time that this has ever been brought to my attention.
Mm.
And, you know, I just met an elderly lady that she was in a very disheveled state whenever she got the bill. And, you know, I just think you know, it's a bit much to expect somebody that's trapped in a car to have to make a call themselves. So, you know, if somebody comes in an accident, it's a very reasonable thing to do, to call the emergency services.
Yeah, but unless you sort of drill down to this, the council are going to say, well, that's a matter for the insurance companies. Do you know what I mean? So, is it that you want the council to waive this, or is it B, that, you know, the insurance companies need to sort of understand the situation? Because I think, you know, you could find yourself with the council saying, we don't disagree, the insurance companies, you know, should cover this, whomever rings.
Well, I suppose, Greg, that maybe the reason I brought a motion on would be a double-pronged approach on it. The first one is, as to, you know, to look at the fee itself. I think it's totally unreasonable to expect people, you know, to pay, you know, a figure that's close to €1,600, and, you know, out of their own pocket. And the second one is, I think that I'd just like to take it to the attention of all the motorists out there. Suppose a lot of us don't check the small print on insurance policies, and, you know, a lot of people think that they're covered for this, and I think it's time, you know, that anybody's listening today maybe would go back and check their own insurance policy to see, and maybe you can ask the insurance company, you know, maybe for an extra €5 or €10 on your policy that you would be covered, you know, in the case of something like this happening.
Yeah.
And you know, that's important for people out there, that the message gets out that they're not covered.
And I presume this 1580, does that apply to also call-outs for chimney fires, for an example?
I'm not sure what the figure is.
Because that would be interesting, because is it fair to charge people for something that's also an accident in that situation, could they find themselves saying, well, I'll try and do this myself and come off the roof, rather than paying almost £1,600. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would be interesting to find out too, because that could arguably be equally unfair. It's an accident, and you could find yourself putting themselves in peril because they're concerned at getting a bill for £1,600. Do you know what I mean? So I'd be very interested to know that as well.
I suppose these are the things that we'll need to look at, you know. But certainly, the Special Policy Committee of Donegal County Council need to sit down and review the whole thing, because, you know, I think the public need to know what's happening, and they need to know what they're covered for, and they need to know what their exposure may be in the case of something like this happening to them, you know.
I mean, say, for instance, there's a council drain blocked and there's a shower of rain and the water runs off the road into your house and you call the fire brigade, is that £1,600? Should you have to pay that, considering you could argue that maybe if the road was maintained properly, you wouldn't be liable? You know, it's a lot of spaces once you're open this can of worms that it would be no harm pursuing whilst you're in that can, if you know what I mean, especially if it deters people from calling an emergency service and putting themselves in peril.
Well, that's right. I mean, we all need the emergency services. It's a great, you know, it's a great resource to have on our doorstep, to have, you know, the fire service and the, you know, the the ambulance service here on our doorsteps. I mean, we've all used them and will, you know, in the future need them. And but I just think, you know, that there's so many taxes and everything on everybody at the moment, and to get a bill in for close to €1,600 that you think that the insurance is going to cover and you find out they don't, I think it's a bit much. So I just, I mean, that's the reason about,
again, because I mean, I'm not exaggerating, but you could find yourself in a situation with someone in the car, maybe even their legs trapped and they don't realise how bad it is, telling someone who comes and asks them, are they okay, please don't ring the fire service, or please don't ring 999 because I can't afford £1,600. We have a responsibility to get to the bottom of that now, because we've raised that potential possibility. You know what I mean? I'm not saying we're wrong in having the conversation, Michael, but we don't want people now changing how they might use the emergency telephone line because of the risk of a €1,600 charge by the shouting. So we'd need to get clarity in all those areas. And maybe you'll rejoin us when you get that. I'd appreciate it if you could.
Okay, look, I appreciate you taking me on this morning.
No, good stuff.
I hope this may be helpful to some of the listeners out there, and the people will go back and check their policies to see what kind of cover they've got on it. And maybe, you know, as time goes on, hopefully the motion will be passed at our municipal meeting. And whenever we get it through the meeting at the SPC, you'll have a chance to get a look at it. Hopefully sometime next year, we may have a review complete on it, and we'll see where we're at then.
All right, thanks very much for your time, Councillor Michael McBride there. So I'm joined on the programme now by Aisling Cannon, chairperson and co-founder of Walkie Talkie Girlies Society. Good morning to you, Aisling. Thanks so much for chatting to us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on.
Right, okay, so talk to me about this society.
So I am the co-founder of and chairperson of the Walkie Talkie Girlies Society at Queen's University Belfast. And we were set up back in November 2023 by myself and my co-founder, Georgia. And it really, our aim was just to set up a safe space where people could socialise, exercise, get outdoors, and also explore Belfast. And so since November 2023, we have grown into something that we couldn't have even imagined, with last year us having over, I think, 560 members, which was pretty insane for being quite a new society. But it's allowed us to do so many interesting things and also to do some really valuable work, especially for the Ending Violence Against Women and Girls campaign.
Yeah, but this doesn't end violence against women and girls, does it? This just sort of protects them or offers some protection. It's kind of worrying. I mean, you can advocate, but it's clear something needs to be done to make people more safe doing the most basic of activities.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, this is obviously such a very complex problem, and there really is, it is very difficult to find out, you know, what is the solution. But I think what we offer is not necessarily protection, but more the opportunity for you to, for our members to come together and sort of put, like, in when they come to our weekly walks, to sort of put, you know, the fears and concerns, and even just the constant sort of thinking about your own safety nearly to the back of your mind, because we're all together, we're walking as a group. And also I feel like in that sort of time when people are feeling, you know, safe and maybe feeling just a little bit more comfortable, then that really is the opportunity for people to really, you know, connect with others as well. So I think it's sort of growing that sense of community. And especially I think for college students as well, because that's where or mainly our members are college students. It's such a great chance for people to get to know a new city, which can be scary, especially with, as we know, the serious amounts of violence against women and girls in Northern Ireland. But I think really it's just, we try to really share like a positive light on it, but also obviously doing the extra bit of work raising awareness for the campaign.
And this is an ongoing problem, the sense of, not the sense actually, the reality of abuse of women. And what I'm trying to get at, there's people are going to be listening that will believe that this has been triggered by immigration policies or what have you. I'm not saying that's not a factor in this or what have you, but this is an ever-present problem that people have experienced, and, you know, might actually even be distracting to the project to sort of suggest it's reactive to a particular event or other.
Yeah. So I think, well, so last year we organised Project Pink, and that was sort of in response to the events of last summer. which saw quite a scary amount of violence against women and girls in such a short period of time. So obviously this is an issue that's, you know, I think it's 28 women have been killed since 2020 in Northern Ireland, which is very scary figures for how small a jurisdiction it is. And then, of course, last summer in Belfast and in Northern Ireland, there was a number of violent attacks and murders against women. And I think it definitely made a lot of people concerned. And there's many different reactions to that. But the reaction that we took was that we need to continue to raise awareness for this issue. And I think Project Pink was pretty much pulled together in 6 weeks as an awareness campaign in Belfast, organised by Queen's students. But it ended up having quite a wide, different amount of people that joined us on the night. And I think that is the important thing, is that this issue isn't just a women's issue. It's an issue that affects everyone. And by only asking women to look at it and to deal with it, it's not really going to solve the problem. And that was the great thing about Project Pink, because we had people from all different communities and walks of life join us on the night.
Yeah, so, this Wednesday, the 5th of November, Aisling's leading another walk, gathering at 5:30 p.m. at Queen's Students' Union, with the walk department at 6:30 p.m. That's particularly for maybe families or students, or families of students that would be listening and can attend. Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time, Aisling, and I hope we get to a point where initiatives like this aren't used, but unfortunately we seem to be going in the wrong direction. But keep doing what you're doing, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.